This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks, Tim, and good morning, everybody. Great to be here. A challenging agenda for today, and I guess in a sense for me, speaking on a slightly different theme from what many of you are familiar with hearing me talk about, but nonetheless, some common issues at least. So I've been asked to look at how international study changes lives. In the program, it has a question mark at the end of that title. I've removed it. So perhaps I've answered the question. It emphatically does change lives. But let's look at some of the ways in which it does and some of the contextual issues around that. And so what I'm hoping to do in the next 15 minutes or so is set the scene a little bit for the insightful contributions that will follow today. Just a reminder of what iGraduate does. Our work is around benchmarking, comparing student and stakeholder expectations and perceptions, and specifically delivering comparative insights around the world. It's the idea of using opinion data as a new metric for decision-making within institutions and recognizing that these days, whether or not we see our students as customers, they have a world of choice. They have chosen to come to our institution. It's important for us to understand why they do, why they stay, and just as much to understand why our staff join us, why they stay, and what would make them want to leave. So looking at the stakeholder groups in the broadest context, and including in that employers, and I'll refer to some of the employer research in a moment, working with many of you in the room and those of you that are online elsewhere, now with around 700 institutions around the world. So in some areas of our work, working with government groups and agencies, at the institution level, looking pre-arrival at the decision-making, there's a student pulse study which is about to report, looking at what prospective students around the world are saying about the UK versus the Netherlands versus Australia, Canada, Belgium as destination countries. And then from when students are engaged, whether it's in language studies, in foundation studies, or further education studies, beyond their studies in terms of graduate outcomes and alumni reflections. But what I guess most of you will know is best for is our work with students, with international students, domestic students, in markets around the world. And so in contributing today, I'm drawing from some of the more relevant studies that we're engaged in and that are continuing. The International Student Barometer, thanks to many of you and others engaged, now has taken feedback from 955,000 students just in the past 5 years. So an amazing depth of insight in terms of the expectations, decision-making and perceptions and aspirations, particularly of students who are studying outside their home country and understanding how that's working for them. Then looking at how graduates are reflecting back on their experience in the UK with funding from BIS and in the Netherlands with funding from NUFIC, and we're looking at where else this is most applicable, to look at international graduate outcomes in particular. So one of the key themes today, what is the benefit of international education? How do we measure that? And particularly from my point of view, not wanting to measure it in terms of how much somebody's earning, but what difference that international education has made to an individual's life. I mentioned that key stakeholder group of employers, how they interact with institutions, what their expectations are of the students and graduates that emerge from there, and their perceptions of those that they're interviewing and employing. And while it's a relatively small study of 212 employers, some fairly emphatic findings, and interestingly in Hong Kong just a few weeks ago, I was reviewing these findings with two other speakers, one from Sweden and one from China, who'd run almost identical studies asking almost identical questions of completely different employer groups in China, in the Nordic countries, and comparing that with the work that I'll be referring to here with employers in the UK and continental Europe, and finding very, very strong correlations in terms of what employers were saying, both in terms of expectations and perceptions of the graduate attributes that they were seeing. So a few themes for today. In fact, I've got four, I think, to propose. The first is, of course, that in talking about study of any kind, I guess we're considering the pursuit of knowledge, the traditional view of what study is all about. And I suppose what's important to recognize is whatever the field of study, whatever level of study, that these days should never be limited by geography. There's no point any of us trying to think that we're in trying to master a particular area of knowledge, we're going to play in a one small corner of the football field and have an understanding of how that works. So while there are some obviously vocationally international studies, areas of study, I think in the pursuit of knowledge, we would not want any individual to limit that simply by their geographic borders. And certainly, in any context, all academic life these days is international. And I think a paper that Drone is about to produce is referring to the fact that something like 35% of papers are now co-authored internationally. Employability. While, of course, we're talking about education and higher education in terms of the pursuit of knowledge, many of you will have heard me say this many times, ultimately, for almost every student, it's about the pursuit of employment. Even if you never want to leave your institution, it's a question of how do I make sure that I can continue to be here and fund the process of continuing study and research. And in that context, I want to remind us that while we might say that higher education generally is a global pursuit, many people will be engaged in areas of employment that really aren't international, and we shouldn't need to worry people about global context and internationalization. With just two or three, four examples here of, in fact, how different that is. The Orange Call Centre in Darlington, some of you may, those of you in the UK may have heard on the news yesterday, call centre staff in Darlington working for Orange, the telecoms company, were told that they were being relocated to the Philippines, not to worry that there was free rice for a year if they moved. And it turned out that, first of all, yes, the call centre was being relocated. That is a true story. And secondly, there was an HR mix-up. And what they were talking about, what they disclosed, was the local terms for the staff that they were employing in the Philippines. And they were hoping to reallocate the UK staff to other places in the UK. But somehow, for an individual who'd been sitting in Darlington thinking their job was particularly local, that sudden sense of global context is, I think, remarkable and important for us all to be aware of. My reference here, I should have said, Drummond Bones, our chairman. I'm delighted to have him here today with us. And while he is, I thought I'd tell the story of Drummond's bins, which I think he might not have heard me tell before. If your job was collecting dustbins in Liverpool 7 or 8 years ago, you would have thought, I don't need to be international. I know the streets that I work in. I know the people that I work with. I know the bins that I empty. I'm not international. However, if you're working in Liverpool today emptying the bins, you're working for a French company doing that. So almost any pursuit of employment, and certainly in healthcare, obviously in education, in almost any area we're looking at, we need anybody who's working to have some sense of the wider context of their work. And while I've taken particularly extreme examples there, if we open it up to HSBC's global fast track, so the world's local bank, when I first started working for them, working with them, helping them to recruit about 15 years ago, they had an international manager program of globally mobile managers, and 50 out of 55 in an average year were British, because the British were a great trading nation who understood the way the world works, like the Dutch do. Of course, the advantage the Dutch have over the British is that you don't insist that everybody does it in your language. I am convinced that the native English speakers are at a disadvantage in an international context for as long as we think that we can rely purely on that native language. And evidently, at some point, HSBC got to the point of saying, when we're recruiting, we want to be sure that we're recruiting people who genuinely understand the context that they're working in the world. And by the time this program had been run, by the time I was 2 years into the program, we were lucky to get two or three British nationals onto a program like that. Because it's so rare, as we will hear more as we go through the day today, it's so rare that there are, at the moment, that there are British students who will genuinely pursue international study to the extent that so many others do from so many other countries. So that's where the UK has evidently found itself at a disadvantage. And the importance of recognising, as parents, as teachers, as educators, that the world of employment has changed. It's not good enough simply to march around the world shouting loudly in English and expecting everybody to do what you say. Shell evidently got there very early on as well. In their international managers program, the requirement was that you had to be globally mobile, willing to move anywhere. It was interesting in the work that I was doing there, we very early found out that managers became less mobile as they moved, that in fact, after two or three moves, they tend to say, no, I need to stay here for a few years now. When they were asked why, they were said, well, family reasons. I'm just with the family at the stage they're at. We don't think we should move. What Shell very intelligently did was also surveyed the spouses and found that the spouses were more mobile than the managers themselves. But again, it's recognising that the importance for us all to be able to see the excitement of the unknown and the challenges that exist and the importance of getting a sense of context beyond our natural comfort zone. In terms of destinations, another rather disappointing statistic that you'll see during today is the proportion of English nationals that are studying in English-speaking countries. the proportion of American nationals who are studying here in the UK or in Australia or in other English-speaking countries. And the Australians, too, for the Australians here, have a similar challenge of trying to encourage young people to study outside their comfort zone and ideally outside their language zone. Now, the interesting point there is that you can now study, and many people know this, you can now study in any country in Europe at degree level in English. So it's not that you have to have a command of another language, but it's the opportunity for individuals to put themselves in a learning context that is not entirely familiar. And so in terms of destinations, recognising the work that's being done strategically, internationally, of course by Australia, by Canada, by New Zealand, and most of the New Zealand universities are, I think, in the UK now or on their way, with the changing fee regime in the UK, to explain to British students and parents that not only do they speak English, they play reasonably good rugby, and cricket's okay in New Zealand too. As nations around the world are positioning themselves around the changes in the UK and saying, what can we do? How can we deal with this to our advantage? And I think ultimately to the advantage of students as well. But also Malaysia positioning itself as a regional hub. Hong Kong doing the same with huge potential there, I think, bridging East and West. And China, of course. Most of us now should be aware that the Chinese government has committed to achieving 500,000 international students studying in China by the year 2020. 500,000. Now, most of us would look at a number like that and say, that's unimaginable for a start. Everything in China seems to be in Chinese. But the reality is that when China says that it's going to achieve something within a certain period of time, it tends to achieve it. And I think we will find also that when you're looking as parents or advisors and saying, how do you prepare yourself for the world that's ahead? It might be by more likely being in Beijing than being in Brentford in the UK. Not that there's anything wrong with studying in Brentford, and it's a great international experience, I have to say, context-wise, but recognising the richness of those destinations in terms of opportunity. And finally, preparation for life, finally of these four themes. We've always talked about education as preparation for life, but I have to say at this point that if somebody travels 30 miles, 50 miles, or 150 miles within their own time zone and within their own national borders, I'm not convinced any longer that that's preparation for life. And the hundreds of thousands of international students studying in the UK and the millions of international students studying outside their home country around the world all understand that. And I think there's a particular challenge for us as educators and in a broader context, whether we're speaking in the UK, in the Netherlands, or anywhere else, to recognise that a preparation for life these days must be in a global context. So that's whether, as education providers, we're internationalising our delivery, not just in terms of international students, but the internationalisation of the curriculum and of the study experience, or whether we're looking at that as individuals. Because my themes here of the collapse of time and the meaninglessness of distance. The collapse of time because things used to take a long time. Simply sending a letter to somebody and getting a reply would take a couple of weeks. Thinking about making a journey would take months and months of preparation and then perhaps months to get there. But cost and time to Barcelona, Berlin, and Beijing. It's cheaper to get to Barcelona than it is to get to Birmingham in the UK from here in London. Quicker to get to Berlin. And interestingly, I had the experience of travelling from south of London to Wembley at the weekend for a particular football match. It took me longer to get there than it would have taken me to get to Ankara. And of course, even Beijing is only overnight, whereas I lost half a Saturday sitting in traffic in south London. The reality is that most of the people we know around the world are not more than a day away. So we really are seeing the collapse of time and a sense of distance. And Glasgow to Edinburgh, I think the point I was going to make there is that we do need to recognise at the same time that you can find students that are completely disorientated and feeling that they're in another country simply by moving along a railway line a certain distance. So I'm not saying that it's specifically how far away you are, but it's going to somewhere that's unfamiliar and hopefully more unfamiliar than Edinburgh versus Glasgow. So how international study changes lives. I want to talk about the characteristics of international students as I've seen them in the years that previously when I was recruiting on behalf of international employers and also those that I've seen and spoken to and taken feedback from in the course of the work that iGraduate's been doing in the past 5 years. So first of all, what we've talked already about, the importance of context, and I'm watching my time, context and unfamiliarity, that we really don't want students to think that the context is local. We don't want them all equally to be completely familiar with their surroundings. I had the personal experience of many of us will that experience. If a student goes to study at a university where a lot of their friends from home are also studying, how much are they really broadening their minds, however different the bars are and however different the lecturers are? It's a question of that embracing unfamiliarity, of independent thinking, the evidence of doing something different. Now, again, there's been the reference to how many, but sorry, it hasn't yet in the forum, but in earlier discussions around how many of those students that are currently, British students currently studying outside the UK are kind of self-selecting, self-directed, exciting individuals. But in a wider sense, we want to say to students, employers will want to see evidence of you doing something different rather than following a million students down the same UCAS path. Self-sufficiency, the ability to survive and thrive in another country. The kind of person who evidently likes a challenge but equally has a tolerance of ambiguity. If you're going to survive and stay the course, deal with disorientation, adapt yourself to your surroundings and have the determination to stay and complete your studies. All of those are, I think, part of the preparation for life. And equally, we'll look in a moment to what extent that's part of what employers are looking for from students as well. And, of course, the ability to communicate. Another reference to the alignment between the UK and the Netherlands and our cultural proximity is that we ask all students in this barometer process how satisfied they are with the English spoken by academic staff. And I have to acknowledge that the highest rating we've ever had was from a Dutch university and not a native English-speaking university at all. And fundamentally, and most importantly, the ability to question how we think. Now, that, of course, has always been part of the purpose of a university education. But in a wider context, I think the ability to question how you think is most evidently going to come from having to study outside of your own country. Now, I'm short of time, so while I want to share some of the findings of the International Student Barometer and the evidence of how things have improved in the UK, I'm going to leave this for you to read following today. But at least the work that's been done in the UK by universities trying to understand the expectations and perceptions of international students has had an amazing impact across the sector, with international student satisfaction increasing by 8 percentage points across 5 years. So great recognition due for the sector and the way that it's tried to understand those challenges that international students are facing, now being followed by universities right around the world. But I suppose what's most important is getting a sense of what employers think and want from graduates. This was the work that we did with the Council for Industry and Higher Education, which I'm also a member of. 86% of employers considering good communication skills to be important. I'm not sure what's happening with the other 14% who don't think that matters. Soft skills are vital and even more important than most. But 65% of employers specifically indicating that having overseas experience makes graduates more employable. And I have to recognise that there are some parents, some families who will say, well, perhaps if you go and study abroad, you're out of the loop. How do you reintegrate again? But recognising the vast majority of employers will say it's attractive specifically to have international experience. We looked at the top 10 capabilities that employers are most satisfied with. We also looked at how important they were. Good to see that employers are most satisfied with the IT skills shown by graduates, and in the satisfaction ranking, second of all, most satisfied with a postgraduate qualification, a good degree classification, a qualification from an institution with a good reputation, and so on. But then let's look at how important those elements are. IT skills ranked number 14 on employers' lists of importance. A postgraduate qualification, interestingly, ranked at 33, meaning that it's not the fact that a graduate has a postgraduate qualification that makes them employable, and I hope there aren't many students that are studying for a postgraduate qualification, assuming that itself will make them employable. Those are not the factors that were most important. And in fact, it's team working skills, it's integrity, it's intellectual ability, but also when we looked at where the gaps were greatest, communication skills, planning and organisational skills, personal development skills, these are areas I've highlighted here as being elements where we're absolutely sure that through international study, through increasing international exposure, that will improve. I've noted there's a gap in passion there as well, not sure whether that would necessarily be addressed purely by international study, but worth exploring, I guess. So finally, in summing up, how should we all prepare ourselves for outward mobility? And while the theme specifically is UK students abroad, I wanted to internationalise that a little bit to outward mobility in the broader sense. Students evidently need to think global. Parents need to look abroad. Schools, I think, these days need to more than open their eyes. It is more than a wake-up call. It's a new dawn in terms of education. From now on, in the UK particularly, parents and students will be expecting their institution to be able to advise them on what the education options are internationally. And for universities, first of all, the key here, making partnerships work. I think many are now moving beyond adding numbers and numbers of partners and focusing in on how to make those partnerships work productively for students as well as for research. Make students travel. Some of the disappointing feedback that we've had is institutions who say we have exchange programs and UK students will join and say, this was a major motivator for why I'm coming here, but actually I'm quite enjoying the place now and I don't feel like moving. So how do we make sure students do move improve those the proportion that are coming and going? You would expect me to say that it's vital to track and compare experience and expectations, but it is, because expectations are differing, changing year on year. The experience also is changing, and the importance of comparing outcomes. So to recognize today's competition is further from home, but closer than ever, whoever you are. And finally, in transforming student futures, we are securing our own. Thank you very much.